The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you.
Good afternoon, Philadelphia. Welcome back to The Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is your host, Gary Heasley. I've got with me in the studio, Ada Nestor. Ada, welcome again to the second hour.
Hello, it's Friday, hour two.
Hour two.
Excited for hour two.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. As we were saying at the end of the first hour, and we never have enough time to get into these conversations in detail with Joel because they're so interesting and complicated, but they're important to understand. But we now start off the second hour heading down a different path. So we have with us this second hour starting out Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb, who's joined us before, who is a resource that helps us look at all things geopolitical. And again, another week of wildness on the geopolitical front. Darren, welcome back to The Conservative Voice on WWDB.
Hey, good afternoon, Gary and Ada. Always a pleasure to join you. Again, still hiding in the mountains of Western Montana.
And again, still very jealous of that from Southeast PA.
Yeah. Although I tell you, we've had stunningly beautiful weather here.
It is. It's been delightful. I'm being facetious. Yes. It's quite beautiful here.
Go ahead.
I'm looking
I'm just going to let people know that, be careful about up here, though, too, because we are right next to the largest volcano in the world.
So, Yellowstone.
You know, if that happens, we're all going to be doing something different.
Well,
but it'll be so fast you won't even know it, right. I think. You're actually, way luckier there where you are. It'll be instantaneous. Here, we're going to suffer the effects of that if it ever happens.
Yes. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at your Twitter today, and you have a great tweet up of a translated Hezbollah Military Wing General Intelligence report here. And these numbers are wild. These numbers are absolutely insane. Can you take our listeners who maybe aren't so in touch with the geopolitical things that are going on or what happened this week and kind of break down what we saw this week in Israel and the Middle East?
Yeah, like you said, it's kind of crazy in many ways, and in other ways, it's sort of the realization of a technological capability that has existed for over a decade now. And simply, what I would call this is a decapitation strike, I guess, is against Hezbollah. And although Israel doesn't always take credit for things, we're all just kind of going, yeah, okay, so we know.
Yeah.
We know ultimately that this comes back into Israel and somewhere. But thousands of injuries, many hundreds of deaths across Hezbollah leaders who were using the pagers, and we'll use that best example, as their command and control device because they were concerned about the hackability and trackability of cell phone systems, which, has always been largely true. So one of the first things a military does when it wants to engage in significant operations against a foe, whether it be a insurgent terrorist group or a large-scale conflict like Russia-Ukraine, is to try to remove their ability to communicate. And that's exactly what happened here, is you took out leadership and coordinating elements and overall the ability of Hezbollah to function over a large area by using these pagers to communicate. And since then, of course, it's been things like solar power systems and radios and other things like that. So Israel has done a very effective job. The people who've not claimed credit for doing this have done a very effective job of continually eroding the capacity of Hezbollah to engage in offensive operations against Israel from the north. And that's been going on for months with the removal of different kinds of munitions dumps. And this is just a potentially a forecast towards Israel continuing to do more major operations, basically like they've done in the last 24 hours, which they struck a couple hundred sites or whatever across that region of Lebanon in order to remove their ability. And that's what Israel did. They did it really well.
And, you know, there's been some outcry I've seen online from people that this was an indiscriminate attack and anyone could have had these pagers and that innocents were harmed here. But I think the point you make about their concerns of having their communications captured or tracked tells me that they were being very careful about who they distributed these devices to. I mean, the risk being someone not in their organization getting one of these devices and then knowing their plans, right?
Absolutely. So not only is it the ability to prevent them from getting hacked and tracked themselves personally, but the ability to keep their communications as guarded as they possibly can about their plans. So if people are worried about this being, you know, indiscriminate, which I hopefully they were actually complaining about that on October 7th last year.
I didn't see it from these particular individuals.
I'm sure not. Hezbollah themselves said these pagers belong to Hezbollah leadership across Lebanon. So, I mean, I'm not the kind of person who's going to say, hey, take Hezbollah at their word readily. But they did use some other means to communicate and say, hey, if you're one of our people, basically, you need to get rid of these things.
So essentially, we've taken them.
They know who had them.
Right. We've taken them from using pagers, which is already a very outdated method of communication, to now, are they stuck with stringing cans? How are they going to communicate their plans to each other now?
Well, I mean, I've seen all the jokes too about the pigeon wars and various things and smoke signals.
I really like the pigeon one.
Those are pretty good. Those are pretty good. But ultimately what this comes down to is they're going to have to make a decision on whether or not they go back to actually using cell phone systems and direct line of sight radios, or if they're going to use some of the even more old fashioned mechanisms of having runners.
Wow.
And dispatching a person on a motorcycle or something like that to take a message to one person or multiple people. So all of this kind of gets to the, I'm sorry?
All of that is really easily surveillable things though. So it's almost like they've pushed them into a position where no matter what they do, they're going to be surveillable.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's also a message here for, people in America who are seeing this, and one, this isn't that easy.
Right.
So don't run around and think that your laptop, your phone or whatever like that is just going to explode because some random hacker decides to make it do that. It isn't quite that simple.
Right.
But it is something we need to acknowledge is out there and is capable of being done. And if it works towards positive ends now, in this case, predominantly, that kind of capability in the wrong hands can certainly be used for great evil as well.
Yeah.
And it all goes back to who do you put in charge or who do you give access to these kinds of things?
Right.
Because worst case scenario that they were doing something similar to this, like, I don't know, everybody who was in D.C. on January 6th.
Mm-hmm. Which we've heard them, that they've used that. Shifting gears a little bit, but still within the threat from Al-Qaeda or the Middle East, the government had come out a few weeks ago and said that there was some kind of threat against Donald Trump from the Middle East. And we saw an assassination attempt this week, and the individual that they've arrested for carrying out the attempt has some really interesting connections to Ukraine as well as the Islamic State. And I was wondering if you had any insight on that. I was really interested to hear your feedback. I know that the media is going to want us to believe crazy lone shooter idea, but the connections, we played a little bit from Jesse Waters at the beginning of the show, the connections are certainly questionable. I was wondering what your input was.
Well, I guess I'd start with asking the question why the first shooter and this shooter are both in BlackRock commercials.
I mentioned that earlier as well. Just a coincidence, just another coincidence.
Yeah. As always, I don't believe in, generally speaking, I don't believe in lone shooters. I believe in expendable shooters, and you're going to have to prove it otherwise to me to say that it was somebody just on their own who was doing this. Now, I've walked around the perimeter of that golf course and driven it around it as well, so there's no doubt in my mind that it's a security nightmare from someone with my background and perspective on it. And I even brought it up, but you know, again, kind of got the ho-hum. But this guy and his ties to recruiting fighters from out of Afghanistan, or saying he's going to try to recruit fighters out of Afghanistan to go fight in Ukraine. All of these kinds of things lead me to one of two conclusions. One, this guy's an asset.
Yep.
And at some point was recruited to do this specific mission or other missions, but was always considered a little bit expendable. Or he truly is just a little bit crazy.
And, I mean, I definitely think he's a little bit crazy regardless. I think they have a type that they like to work with. But just what he was up to and the amount of money that must have gone into his travels, into his recruitment, where he was living. He couldn't pay his child support. There's so many things that, you know, if you look at the two pieces together, he couldn't pay his child support to the point where his ex-wife, you know, canceled the child support requirement. But he's living in an $800,000, you know, home in Hawaii and traveling internationally regularly. Like, how do you put those two things together? So my understanding this week,
the guy who couldn't use the money for child support, that's for sure.
Right. So where's that money coming from? At the end of the clip we played earlier, Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, was indicating that the federal agencies were not letting the state agencies come in and investigate the perimeter. They wouldn't even let them go to where the man was found. So it looks like we're in for, I guess, more of what we saw the first assassination attempt, with a lot of misdirection and misinformation flooding the field, I would say.
Yes, and this is consistent with the theme that government agencies are going to make sure they give you a full report years after the event and way past the point of it being relevant or useful. And now that's not a statement against Governor DeSantis. That's a statement against the feds down there. And I'm all behind him flexing that 10th Amendment and saying, you know what, this is ours.
Right.
And you could be a partner or you could be an obstacle, and just asserting what the rights that he has under not only just logic, but the law too.
And I wonder what's going on in Trump's orbit, because my understanding is that golf game was not planned, was not on the schedule, and was sort of a last minute thing that he did. Am I off base on that? I think that's what I heard the reporting say.
Well, I'm suspicious that always that someone is leaking information about about his schedule. There are far too many people in the deep state among various agencies and these things that the information can so easily be passed. And given the rhetoric on the left about eliminating him and all this kind of stuff, it leads to some fairly obvious conclusions in my mind that the entire thing, once again, was choreographed. And that's just two that we know of. And I suspect there's at least twice as many as that or more, either attempts or plans, because these, not only within our own borders, but nations like Russia, Iran, North Korea, and others will certainly don't want to see him as the president, despite the fact that, you know, what the Democrats always say and the Harris campaign always says, that, you know, that he is supposedly on the a fan of Putin.
Well, yeah. I think Putin endorsed Kamala. I believe he already came out and said he wanted Kamala as the next president. So there was another event this week that's only getting a little bit of attention. But in Arizona, Donald Trump had a rally, and there were numerous people. Mm-hmm. He stopped and talked to them on his way out. They were sitting behind him on the stage, or standing behind him, as it were. and many of them were afflicted with some sort of illness. They had to go to the emergency room. They lost their vision for a short period of time. It did return later on. And, you know, I think that with everything else going on, it's certainly worth looking at and asking the question, did something happen there? Was that related to the earlier assassination attempt? Because I look at it as two things. I look at them as trying to take Trump off the field entirely because I think they see the writing on the wall for the direction that the country's going in. But I think there is another side that is meant to scare people away from coming to the rallies, scare people away from showing their support to him, because I think those rallies look very bad for the other side. And so when you see multiple people getting sick at a rally who shared this stage with him, these aren't just people who were in the, you know, the bleachers up in the auditorium or in the back of the room. They were on the stage with Donald Trump. I have some concerns on his safety overall, no matter where he is at this point.
And their safety.
Everyone's safety.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll admit it. I went to the RNC convention not convinced I was going to come home. I mean, it's just one of those things. You're like, anything is possible when evil manifests itself in so many ways. And yes, it is getting underreported what happened there. And I've talked to my groups of people that I'm with, and it's very well known that it happened. I suspect it'll be brushed under the world's largest rug in D.C. again. And try to be forgotten about, because they may try something like that again. Now, fortunately, the spreading of pathogens and viruses and various things is not as easy as the movies make it look like. So we don't have to run around being paranoid necessarily.
Right.
But there's a level of vigilance that I don't think most Americans have really woken up to, and that because they all need to have it in small towns and large.
Yeah, you know, when this concern we have that Americans are so comfortable that really they aren't prepared to deal with any of these kinds of risks. They aren't even thinking that they still look at the world and say, well, that couldn't possibly happen here. It couldn't happen in my neighborhood. It couldn't happen in my town. And the truth is, the things we're seeing now can happen anywhere. And there are no explanations, and they're none asked for. Like that issue at the Trump rally, there's been no response by anyone saying, hey, this is what happened. This is what we, you know, nothing. Just it happened. Silence.
Well, I mean, even the second attempt this week had very little coverage. So between the two things, it makes Trump look like a victim, and they can't have him personified. They can't have him humanized. They can't have him be a victim, because then people will start to feel feelings towards that, towards him. And God forbid we have feelings. And one more thing I wanted to touch with you, Darren, before I'm sure Gary has questions for you. But this week it came out and Donald Trump responded to the reports that Iran had been hacking his campaign and handing that information over to Kamala's campaign. And my question, that sounds like treason. My question is, how are we not seeing the Russia, Russia, Russia fury that we saw in 2016 when they accused Russia of doing the same for Trump? So if Iran's hacking the campaign and giving that information to Kamala and she is a sitting vice president, how is that not a serious violation of law?
Well, it is a serious violation of law. It's just that the justice system in America has been captured by all the people who don't want Trump in office. So why pursue it?
So just as there's,
they don't want to.
The same situation with election issues, right? There are mountains of evidence of election problems. And what you get from the organizations responsible for enforcing those laws is there's no election fraud.
There's no evidence.
Refuse to look at it. They fight anybody that has standing in court to make sure that they don't actually get to make their case. And then they sit around and say, we beat them in court. When in fact, they haven't won cases. They simply prevent the cases from being heard.
Yeah.
And the courts are unfortunately all too willing to do that, to go along with them on that. So it is a situation where, as I described, we don't have a two-tiered system of government here. You know, we've got something more like a four-tiered. So, you know, you've got the people that are on the narrative with the globalists, with the leftists. They can do anything they want. As long as it works for the cause of the party and the cause of the leftist and the globalist, it's not prosecuted. Then you've got the people who are just very, very wealthy and can buy really good attorneys and do all the things necessary, have the experts that do the work, and they get a little different treatment because they can defend themselves in a way that average people can't. And then you've got the average people who are really just normal citizens, and they might be able to get an attorney or a state's attorney if they can't afford one. We all know the lines. They may get falsely accused and go to prison, but maybe not. I mean, we all know there are a lot of people that have been in jail, found to be innocent when DNA evidence came out, for example, and are released. People that were on death row who clearly didn't commit the crime once DNA evidence. So if you're a regular person, you might end up in jail. You might not. You might get a plea offer that you just have to take because the other alternative is life in prison or something. They're in dealing with what is sort of the normal day-to-day justice system. And then you've got this fourth group. And that's the people like the January 6th people. That is the group that is opposing the narrative, that is actively working to restore the Constitution, to turn the country around. And that group has an entirely different legal reality. And that's what Donald Trump, despite being a billionaire, has faced in all the lawfare. What he's faced is that fourth tier of justice where the system has turned on its own people with a political agenda, and it is relentless. And that's why we have people that are still in jail for January 6th that committed crimes like trespass,
right?
No violence, took selfies with police, picked up, run off to jail, and never come back. And now, of course, some have gotten out since, right? Peter Navarro going to jail for what was it again? Not responding to a summons by a House committee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, everybody, there is a legion of Democrats who have refused to respond to House subpoenas. They don't have a worry. They're not charged with any crime. The sergeant of arms doesn't show up at their house. They don't get SWAT raided. They just walk off and say, I'm not talking to you. But Peter Navarro, he has to go to jail.
Yeah.
And so we're in this situation where we've got four tiers of justice, and I think it is affecting us on the election integrity side because they refuse to hear the cases, and it's affecting us where crimes like some strange thing being released in a crowd at a Trump rally aren't even investigated, aren't pursued. And when something is obvious, like the shooting in Butler, where they tried to shoot President Trump and in fact hit him in the ear there, they destroy the evidence, wash the roof, get rid of the body, and we never hear anything more about it. Oh, it's an investigation. We can't answer questions forever.
Well, that's the modus operandi, right? It's under investigation. We can't discuss open investigations, and we'll hear that, you know, indefinitely.
Right. So,
yeah, even here in Montana, we've had a Supreme Court case that's been sitting in the queue for over 10 years that deals with abortion. So lawfare is real.
In the queue for 10 years? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it's the Supreme Court doesn't want to rule on it, so they just set it aside.
Yeah.
And now that they're concerned about a potential that of having two decent people actually get elected onto the Supreme Court, then they rule on it in a way that favors the abortion industry and all the profiteers.
You know, this abortion question is interesting, and this is far afield from what we typically talk with you about. But I know that in addition to being a geopolitical resource that we can cover anything with, you're also the chairman of your county Republican committee, correct?
Correct.
And so, you know, you're in these issues too. I spent some time yesterday. So we've got a neighborhood in Philadelphia many people know about called Kensington. And Kensington is where over years there was a consolidation of injection centers and treatment centers and a concentration of addicts. And it really became, sort of famous on the international scene because of the sheer number of people in the zombie state down there and the shooting up on the streets. And it's just become infamous. So I went down yesterday and I spent time walking in Kensington. And one of the places that I went was a women's crisis center, a women's pregnancy crisis center, right? So when you've got a crisis pregnancy and you live in the area that I was in, sort of North Philly, there are four abortion mills surrounding this community, right, or part of it. within 20 minutes of each other and no crisis pregnancy centers. So someone opened one, and we've had her on the show. We've had her at Keystone Town Halls. We're going to have her back. But she went to pastors for support. And some of the pastors said, well, abortion's a political issue. We can't get involved. Mm. One of them apparently said, if I get involved in a political issue, I might lose my tax status. They're hiding behind the IRS to avoid talking about abortion. Yep. So she got some support and she's now opened the clinic and it's going. But when you look at what's happened, it is so incredibly one-sided. If someone in that community has a crisis pregnancy, all of the investment, all of the cash flow, all the powers that be are organized to push that person toward abortion. And you know, we talked about this. It's not passive, right? They don't let them see the sonogram images. They don't let them talk to anybody that might say, hey, you have an alternative course. They don't talk about adoption. It's really like a tunnel that they're pushing you down toward this one outcome that they so desperately want to achieve, because we know that this goes beyond just the normal industry. This goes beyond normal, you know, making something available that's safe, legal, and rare. This is an element of their core religion, the woke religion. It is the central theme of every Democrat speech, that if you don't elect us, you may lose your ability to take out your child and remove it. And apparently to a huge section of America, that's a very popular thing, that is the most important political issue. So when you think about the power of the abortion industry, it is significant, right? I think the last time I looked at Planned Parenthood's revenue, it was something in the neighborhood of $1.6 billion. Their assets were roughly $2 billion, if I remember correctly. So that's a big organization. But they're not doing all of the abortions. Of course, there is a vast collection of alternative abortion mills everywhere that are actively in the industry. So,
well, and they target low income and minority neighborhoods. That's, you don't ever find an abortion clinic, you know, in a very nice neighborhood on the main line. You're finding it in neighborhoods where people are left without any other options and they feel like that is the only option available to them. There are not crisis centers. There are not resources available as plentifully as the abortion resources are made available.
That's right. So the case that was heard, the 10-year case in Montana, what was that? What was that about?
Basically, it was just bring it down to its base document, I guess you could say, or whatever. It was all about making sure that the unfettered and unrestricted access to abortion mills was guaranteed for all ages without parental consent.
So this is that what you just described is now an element of the Ohio Constitution. They passed an amendment last November that made that a permanent element of their Constitution. It's an amendment to the Constitution that says unlimited access, no restrictions, and no parental requirement if you read it properly. So this is something that they've locked in, let's say, in a lot of different states. In the state of Pennsylvania, of course, there's no restriction on abortion for a very long time. What is the total number of weeks?
I want to say it's 26.
That's what I think it is. Yeah. So let's say 26 weeks. That's a very long time in the course of an abortion, or in the course of a pregnancy. So people are running around talking about this as if it's the issue that should be voted on in November. And in fact, in Pennsylvania, there is zero chance that they lose rights to abortion. There's zero chance that law has changed. Could
Never
not possibly happen. No.
Absolutely.
Even if we had a Republican governor, it wouldn't happen.
Nope.
You know, because the Republican Party in Pennsylvania specifically makes sure they never implement any important policies. There's a small number of elected officials. You're familiar, I think, Darren, you're familiar with the Freedom Caucus at the state level. And
that, I am.
Yeah,
that's the Freedom Caucus director in Montana.
Yeah, I know. And I was surprised to learn that. I keep learning new things about you that sort of, you know, wake me up. But the Freedom Caucus is a group that leans hard into the fight on a lot of issues. And they take tremendous pressure from the Republican Party and the Democrat Party and elected officials for doing that. But they continue to fight. That group is clearly ideological. They believe in something. Much of our Republican Party here seems to not believe in much of anything.
except profit.
Mail-in ballots. They really believe and invested millions and millions of dollars this year into mail-in ballots. The Republicans did. And I would like to report happily and thrillingly that the requests for mail-in ballots from the Democrats are more than 400,000 less than they were in, was it 2022 or 2020? I don't remember. And the Republicans have also likewise requested far less than they did in 2022 or 2020. So, you know, I don't understand when you as a party look at half of your active party members, your elected committee members, right, who are telling you that there is fraud, who are showing you reports of said fraud, who are showing you videos of ballot harvesting and trafficking happening live in front of your face, to then make their entire plan for the 2024 election cycle be promoting mail-in ballots. It blew my mind. My mind continues to be blown. They have failed epically this year. They could have invested that money into personifying all of the state candidates that are running for state house or for the Senate. They could have done so many incredible things with that money. But no, we were all told we needed to promote mail-in ballots. That's what the Republican Party in Pennsylvania believes in now. So just so we're clear, I've been holding that in for months, by the way, months.
Yeah. And, you know, when you talked about me being the county chair for the GOP, it's kind of like, it's politically, it's the lowest priority thing I do. But what I don't want to do is leave it up to others who are doing that. So if I can stand in the way, then I'm going to do it. But if it fails, I don't like parties either. I prefer people. I prefer Americans voting in along the lines of constitutional principles and the principles of life. So, you know, what does the GOP platform mean if people are not following it? Well, then it doesn't mean anything. But then again, the same is true of the Constitution. So I'm going to stand in the way of other GOPers who might try to take over something and run it and make a name for themselves. But that's just one of many efforts. So
that's essentially how I feel.
It'll last as long as it lasts.
Yeah, I'm an elected committee woman as well here in Chester County, and I feel very similarly to you. And so I'm just in their way. I wanted to jump back to the pastors not getting involved. We had a great pastor on last week from Avengrove, and I want to point everyone to your Substack. It's that we've talked about before. You had a great post on September 8th called Equipping the Saints in 2024. And I didn't know if you had a couple minutes to promote it and talk about that piece that you put up, but it coincided. I think I sent the pastor from last week's post to you because it coincided so well with what you had put up. So I didn't know if you had a couple minutes to talk about that.
Sure. Yes. Thank you for the opportunity to do that. I mean, it's with a name like Darren Gaub, G-A-U-B, it's kind of hard not to find me online. So just type in Substack and my name, it'll pop up. But Equipping the Saints was part of a series of articles that I've written over some years now about churches and evangelicals getting involved in Catholics and whatever. It doesn't really matter. The church who has a biblical view of the world needs to be the loudest voice in the room and not step back and cede all of that ground to the people who are going to take over as the loudest voice if we're not doing it. And similar to what you said about churches and pastors having this fear of having their tax status removed because they engage in politics. Well, first of all, I say, if you're doing this for tax purposes, you're not doing it for kingdom purposes. So don't worry about that argument. It's already discounted. And second of all, you can do most everything you need to do without violating your C3 status. So, you know, every excuse you're looking for, as far as I'm concerned, is not relevant. And the major point of that particular one with Equipping the Saints was, if Paul had written the New Testament today as the instrument of God that he was then, but now instead, he would have engaged in cultural arguments because that's what he was writing in a lot of his New Testament books about women with head coverings and long hair or shaved heads. And you can go through and find numbers of topics like, you know, meat sacrifice to idols and all this kind of stuff. those were culturally relevant at the time that are, you know, provide principles to us today, but are no longer relevant to us from a cultural standpoint. But if Paul wrote that New Testament today, he'd be talking to the church about DEI. He'd be talking about abortion. He'd be talking about Marxism. He'd be talking about all these different things that are infecting our society, because Satan basically says that if you're going to remove yourself and put yourself behind the walls and be silent, then I'm going to fill all of those voids with something. And he doesn't care. Satan doesn't care which lie you follow as long as you follow one of them. Again, one degree off of true north over time, you're way off course.
Right.
And we as humans must constantly self-correct. But if we're silent and thinking that the church's mission is completed by preaching once every Sunday, then we've failed. And it's not like God can't do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, but he wants us with him. He wants us to be part of this.
So we've actually got a caller as a question. Richard, welcome to the Conservative Voice.
Hello. How are you?
We are well, and you? What's your question or comment?
Oh, it's not a question. I have a comment from yesterday. This is Richard Bennett. I was the guy that walked with you yesterday to Kensington.
Oh, and Rich, how are you?
Yeah, how are you?
Great.
Anyway, Gary, listen, just because them people aren't able to talk or speak, believe me, they're listening. So some of them, the family that walked through today went to school. Some of them got up off the ground and they said that what you and I was talking about was absolutely the truth. And they appreciate what we were doing. And they said, thank you. Thank you so much. So these are people that are homeless and on the streets doing drugs that actually heard us, Gary, walking by them. And they were standing up today saying that everything that they spoke about was the truth.
Now, Rich, give me a moment to put some context around this. Darren, I don't think you heard this earlier segment of the show, but maybe you've heard some of this comment. But yesterday I took a thing called a walk in Kensington. That's what we call it. And, you know, myself and some other folks went down and we did a few things. One, we started out at a crisis pregnancy center. So the one we were just speaking of, that's the alternative to the abortion mills, right? And we had this discussion about how that got created and why this woman who's so passionate was driven to do that. It was a wonderful discussion, emotional, but wonderful. And then we went and met Rich, who's on the phone with us now, and we walked the path to school that his 8-year-old niece walks. And there's a story about this. We're going to have Rich in the studio. So at another point, we'll go through this in more detail. But, you know, in Kensington and Port Richmond, you see these drug addicts. You see, when you look at the ground, you see these little orange pieces of plastic everywhere that come off the tips of syringes. When we got to the school is a Catholic school, and it's built like a fortress. It's the old, you know, rock buildings. It's got stone walls. And across the street from the school is a safe injection center. So the city is funding this and the state is funding, whoever's funding it. It is a very heavily trafficked place where people go to shoot up. Next to the injection center, and I mean immediately adjacent, it is immediately next door, is a preschool. So you've got a preschool, an injection center, and across the street, you've got a school. So Rich walks his niece to school every day because of the drugs and the the risk of bad actors and just the things she's seeing. So the people, Rich, then, that you're talking about are the folks that, as we were walking, some people just, you know, made some comments and spoke to us briefly. And you're saying they got up today and made the comments
they
you just shared.
They stood up off the ground and made comments. Yes, sir. They said, you know, everything that those two men were talking about yesterday, the guy in the red shirt, and the other guy, whatever they were talking about was the truth, and it was so touching, they said. So these are people, Gary, that you seen firsthand yesterday, that are homeless, that are on drugs, that are, believe me, they're listening. And I think it shows some kind of positive reinforcement that actually they really do want help, because at the end of the day, we're all God's children. Nobody says I want to grow up and be on drugs when I get older and be in Philadelphia, you know?
So, well,
anyway.
And to be clear, we didn't walk down those streets and cast scorn upon those people, right? We weren't there to look down on them.
No.
We were simply looking at the situation and what's happened to them. And there was one particularly tragic situation that I felt when we were walking through one of the intersections. There were three people sitting on, I don't know if they were boxes or something, in front of a building. You remember the intersection these three people were sitting on?
Yes.
And one of them was, I think, a beautiful young woman, maybe in her mid-20s, I would guess. But she had the appearance of that scarecrow, that skeleton thing going on, right? You could tell that she had been really, yeah. You remember the woman I'm speaking of?
I do. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep.
And as we were going by, she was using the drugs, right? So here we're watching this happen. And when you looked in her eyes, when I don't know, Rich, what you saw. When I looked in her eyes, the soul is gone.
Despair.
It is so troubling to watch someone like that in that state. I mean, what did you see when we were at that corner?
Sir, this is not just what I seen, but this is what these kids have to see every single day. My niece had said one time to her grandma, her nan, my friend said, "Okay, baby, you have a nice day in school." She said, "Nan, I counted 35 needles on the way." So this, I know.
And
I don't want to take up too much of your show right now, and I'm sorry, but I do appreciate everything that you guys, you and your show does, and God bless each and every one of you. Thank you.
Well, Rich, thank you for calling in. And you know, the fact that you moved to Philadelphia because of the problem, not moved away to run from it, but you came here and you came here to make sure that your 8-year-old niece is, you know, is safe and maybe to try to make a difference. I mean, I really do appreciate what you're doing. And
well, I appreciate it. And not just my niece, my favorite 8-year-old in the whole world. You know?
Yeah, right. And we didn't get a chance to meet her, unfortunately, because I think you made a wise decision that we would not walk to school with her. We rather waited till you had done that, and then we just walked the same path. I think it was wise because she shouldn't have heard the conversation we had at 8 years old.
No.
You know?
But she knows. She experiences it every day. Her and her friends, they experience this every single day. And, like, you've seen it firsthand. When you look at these poor people, the eyes are the means to the soul.
The window to the soul.
The windows to the soul. There you go. Thank you. When you look at these people and they're like, they're looking, but the lights ain't on. And it's sad. It really is sad because there is no soul. There is no, their eyes, they just look like right past you. And if I'm able to realize this and the kids realize this, then, you know, we have a crisis here. And we need our lawmakers to start stepping up and change this.
Well, let's again, Darren. This isn't what we had planned to speak to with you, but you're,
I know, but I'm
no, it's good.
You're,
it's
you're
awesome.
Fully, you're.
I said 30 seconds.
No, that's okay. I mean, Darren is fully capable of having almost any conversation. You know, whatever we're talking about. The reality is that Kensington and Port Richmond and other areas in Philadelphia were not like this 4 years ago.
No.
Of course, there's always been a drug problem.
Yes. No, there were drugs, but the idea that it's just open air use, that there's nothing being done about it, that children are walking by it on their way to school, that has intensified in the last 4 years, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. And it's just become like so accepted and normalized,
right?
That it's, you know, when before I left to go to Florida 3.5 years ago, it was illegal to be doing this stuff, and we walk by it now like on a daily basis. These poor kids, we didn't have to go through this when we went to school. Why does this generation have to, you know? And the businesses that are being closed down. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Etta.
And when you have, you know, this going on and you have normalized it, it's almost like the need to help disappears for the rank and file people who are walking by every day. They're not, it's just normal and that's what they live with now. So then it's just ignored instead of having people come in and deal with it. And I think there's some financial resources that are being wasted or funneled elsewhere and not actually helping this problem. But it's almost, we've talked now about how their eyes, there's no soul, or how there's just nothing behind the eyes, or I said despair. But honestly, back to the article we were just talking about with Darren at Equipping the Saints in 2024, these faith leaders need to be out in these communities, because I don't think anything can bring light back into your eyes other than knowing that God loves you and that you don't have to live Amen. This way, and that there is help for you no matter what you have done. I am not one of those Christians who grew up Christian and have lived a very perfect life. I was a teen mom. I struggled throughout my life with decisions that I made because I lived without God in my life. So,
and there you go. Yep.
There is a way for them and there is a path forward for them, but we just keep putting Band-Aids on the problem and throwing money at it that is clearly not going to the issues. That money is going elsewhere. We're putting safe shoot-up locations so that there's someone that can help you if you overdose. That's not a solution. These are not solutions.
Well, but it is an opportunity, right? So Rich and I were standing on the street talking, and we noticed this injection center next to the preschool, which to me was shocking because I hadn't seen that before. And, you know, you're not allowed to have certain kinds of institutions near schools,
right.
But that's okay,
right?
Which is shocking. So we took a picture of it. And sure enough, you know, as we're standing there talking and not particularly paying attention to the people there, constant flow in and out, someone approaches us with that sort of fake respect or that fake politeness that the leftists use, you know, where they pretend they're being genuine. You know what I'm talking about, right, Rich? I mean,
yes, sir. I was there. I experienced it with you.
And so this guy shows up and says, can I help you? I'm like, you know, we're standing on a sidewalk. Like, help us with what? Do we particularly look like we need help? And so we said, no, what are you looking for? What can we do for you? And he said, well, it is prohibited to take photographs at our clinic.
Ah.
So really?
Public sidewalk, folks.
And so I quickly responded with that thing. What is it again?
Constitution.
That's the one.
That silly, old, outdated piece of paper that a bunch of out-of-touch men wrote.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, you know, if you don't have to read all the long words and paragraphs, just get down to those first 10 things with numbers in front of them and just read the first one, and it explains why we're free to be here to do what we want to do. So, of course, he threatens the police. I said, well, call the police. As a matter of fact, you call them right now and tell them you caught somebody taking a photograph on a sidewalk.
Yeah.
And we'll wait with you for them.
We'll see what the response time is in the neighborhood.
And it was kind of fun because this guy seemed to have no idea that anyone would ever respond to him with anything other than compliance. And so, you know, he shuffled off and disappeared. But what the real problem was is that us standing there, us taking photographs of the building just to show the positioning and be able to describe it to people later, that's a threat to the cash flow.
Yes.
That slows the customer base.
Cash flow, yes.
I don't know how many customers he gets in there injecting themselves every day. Rich, what do they do when there's an overdose?
They take them to the third floor, bring them back, and send them back down to the first floor.
So they take them up to the third floor,
hit them
with Narcan, and then ship them out. And it's, you know, and I suppose if somebody dies, they just call, you know, a wagon to take them away.
I know we're running out of time with our 2 hours a week, but I do want to interject that when you hit someone with Narcan and it brings them back from their overdose, those addicts are generally upset because you've now taken away their high that they invested in.
Their high.
And they go out and they use again, often to catastrophic reactions because they still have the drugs in their system and they load onto it. So what they consider to be a solution by just giving these folks Narcan, which I don't even think Narcan's working against Trank in Philadelphia.
I don't think it's very effective with, if you get a hot spot in a pill that you take that has fentanyl in it, a hot spot is a highly concentrated amount, you know, because these are not particularly pharmaceutical grade pills these people are taking. You get a hot spot, you're dead.
Well, there's also the xylazine, I think it's called, the Trank, that's on the street right now. And I'm not sure that the shots are even effective or the nasal sprays are even effective on that. But anyway, the point is, taking them to the third floor, hitting them with Narcan, and then sending them out to the streets is a death sentence for some of these people.
Sure.
Yes.
But the billions and billions and billions that the government has pumped into this industry.
Yeah.
And think about this. I remember a congressman in Ohio, a Democrat who's since been removed from office and replaced. He ran for Senate and J.D. Vance beat him. And he came out and bragged that $9 billion had been put into treatment centers.
Yeah.
At that point, the nation was losing, say, 30,000 Americans a year to opiate overdose. It's over 100,000 now. Since these people seized control, and Rich, I apologize. I know you heard me say this yesterday, and I say this all the time.
You don't apologize for nothing, sir.
I just don't think America can hear this enough. 400,000 Americans are dead from opiate overdoses since these people seized control, and there's zero effort to try to genuinely stop the flow. Darren, are you seeing much of this in Montana?
We are. In fact, traveling the country now, I'll tell you that it's in every state, every town in some capacity, and has flooded the entire country. And it's a plan, not only by our own government to make have people make money and profit off of things, but it's also fully supported by the Chinese and others who are seeking to culturally destroy us. And I think this comes down to the fact that, well, going back to the faith-based focus that we ended at, you got a whole bunch of people here who are looking at life as if when they die, they just cease to exist and that's the end. And we need to be the voice that tells them that, you know, eternal life is a reality for everybody. And we are here to provide you a sense of hope, a sense of truth, a sense of real, actual love that can bring you out of this environment into where you need to be. And my organization and the people I work with, we're all the same mind that says no matter what's going on, no matter how much we may dislike what someone's doing, that we also need to be the first one in line to provide, be willing to dispense with the grace that we can as human beings anyways, and accept them back into the fold if they come into the reality of what they're doing to themselves and to others. Because we're all part of this massive collection of what's called imperfect, sinful human beings who are, some are saved by grace and some are not. That's the only difference. So we can't walk the streets in judgment. We have to walk the streets with the real message of love and healing that works, the only one that works. Because everything else, you've already highlighted the fact that this is just a means for people to make a lot of money through the addictions of others, whether that addiction is drugs or whether that addiction is the political perspective that we have to maintain our choice over our right to be able to kill young children in or out of the womb.
All right. So you're right on point here. And a lot of people here in the Philadelphia area and Southeast Pennsylvania collectively, they would not think that this problem exists in Wyoming, in Montana, in Colorado. I guess Colorado now everybody knows, but Montana, Wyoming, Idaho, people just don't think that this would be out there because it's this, you know, beautiful Western image that we see, and that's certainly what it is. But this problem does exist there, and you're telling us it is there.
It absolutely is here, and I live in a small town of what I would call small town of 35,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last 4 years, we've been flooded with fentanyl and the drug trade. And one of the reasons why is because we're on an interstate. We're a state capital. All of these things that you see in Philadelphia are in every state in the union.
Wow. Now,
And by the way, across Europe and Canada and many other places as well.
And when you see go ahead, Rich.
I'm sorry, Gary. It's our borders. Our borders, first of all, on the federal level, we need our borders closed. And Donald Trump said this over and over and over again. And all this stuff, this trickle-down effect, this is very negative and has a very big Democrat fingerprint on it. And it's all, it's demonic. It's just if you follow the money, and I'm sorry it took up so much of your show, Gary, but like I said yesterday, it is demonic, and we'll get into that another time.
Yeah, we will definitely have you in the studio, Rich, to talk about this. And let me just note, we've got 2 minutes left. So Darren, your insights and telling us this are important to me because what I find when I'm talking to people, if they don't live near Kensington or near Port Richmond, if they live outside of Philly, I'm talking about one county out, many of them think we're safe out here. Mm-hmm. It can't come here, as if there's some barrier. We've got about a minute and a half left. Darren, how can people feel safe because they're 50 minutes, an hour and 15 minutes, something like that, from Kensington? Are there any safe zones left?
I don't think there is such a thing as a safe zone anymore. And if it's not there yet, it's coming extremely soon because it's growing out. If I'm seeing it in towns of 200 people in central Montana, then what town in Pennsylvania would not meet that criteria? I think it's all. So I think the best thing we can possibly do anywhere in the country is rebuild our communities, individual at a time, no matter what size of the community it is, keep the church at the center of it, and work together to bring our communities back and not rely on any agency of any government to fix this for us, because they do not want to fix themselves.
Right. And people who are in need, the people that are being destroyed by this, we don't meet them with scorn and judgment. We meet them with strength. We're not going to let you harm Rich's niece. And we meet them with compassion. We know that they're suffering. We know that they didn't intend to get there, as Rich just said so well. It's not about judging people. It's about finding a solution for all of us. It's about finding a better path. This November, if we lose this election, we will not be able to get back on that path. Gentlemen, we're out of time. And so thank you so much. And we will we'll see you all again here next week on The Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860, thank Philadelphia. Thank you, Rich. Thank you, Darren. Thank you, Ada.
Great time. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Ada. God bless you, Ada.
God bless all of you.